Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to Ipswich. The agenda for today is built around a series of presentations. And we've built this with project leaders talking about the areas that they're dealing with in the operational improvement plan. And the idea is that you will hear firsthand from the guys that are leading the projects and at the same time get to understand what their experience, knowledge and where they've been previously is to just build on the fact that, you know, we've got credibility in the business now that are guiding us towards, a better future. And I suppose we just go back to the fact that, in the last few years, it became increasingly evident that Headlam was losing its way when it came to performance. We were doing a marvellous job at top-line development, but by the time that translated through to bottom profitability, we weren't really seeing the requisite return. And, in many ways, it had come about because increasingly we were finding inefficiency in the organisation. And that inefficiency was coming to life because of the structure with which we built the business. So, it served us extraordinarily well up to around about 2007. The world did change then, of course, and we started to see declining performance in the business. So we decided to take the bull by the horns and look at the business in a different way. And that's why, all these guys that you'll meet today are now in the business. We needed to deconstruct what we'd done, introduce simplicity, and start to look at our markets in a slightly different way. So there is a heavy emphasis on what we're doing with the top line. There is some news on what we've done in terms of efficiency. But the essence of today is to give you greater insight into what we've been doing, so that hopefully when you go away, you've got a far better understanding of what we've been doing. But equally, I think, for you to understand why the chronology has been the way it has. So I'm now going to introduce you to Adrian, our UK Managing Director of the distribution business.
So what I wanted to do is just effectively start by talking through the overview of the agenda and actually introducing the people that we'll be talking to. I'll provide an overview. And then each of the team will provide a bit of an update on specific areas, as you can see laid out on the chart. If I could just introduce my team, that'd be worthwhile. So Ian Leonard's our Sales Development Director. Ian will be talking through what we're doing on Salesforce effectiveness. Farron Murphy is our Director of National Carpets and Key Accounts. He'll be talking about one of the exciting market opportunities that we've got. Ian Crick is behind the tellies over there, but will be talking to us about trade counters. And Rob Mast is our head of digital development, and he'll be talking about not only digital development, but some of the work we've done on transport. So those are guys that we'll be talking later this morning. So the first thing I thought I'd do is just give you a little bit of, I suppose, background on myself. I joined Headlam in April 2019, and the mandate that Steve gave me was to create and implement a development plan for the UK operations. Across a military and commercial career, I've got 30 years of supply chain and operational leadership experience. And when looking at what Headlam required, I believe that the sort of extensive operational leadership experience at a senior level was one of the key attributes that was helpful. And also, as you'll notice, most of my career has been in supply chain. I've had the opportunity to work in origin in China, working in a commercial sourcing office, right the way through to customer-facing operations for e-commerce and running contact centres. So a full remit of the whole value chain, which, when we're looking at the opportunities within Headlam, is really important. What I would say is a lot of my experience, particularly commercially, has been characterised by change and really leading some big programs for some major businesses, not only about network development, and we'll talk a bit more about network development in a second, but also in customer-facing programs, developing e-commerce propositions. I think the key part of what I bring is the ability to think through and plan what's required, and then have the ability to take accountability and deliver it. So what was it about Headlam that was so exciting? I think for me, Headlam presents a significant opportunity. The basic fundamentals of the business are really strong. We already have national coverage, and very few of our competitors can compete with that. We have a really good dominant market position in the distribution market, and I'll come on to that in a second. We've got a very broad product offering, and when you look at Headlam, sometimes we get very focused on the distribution elements of it, and this business here is a distribution business. We effectively distribute other people's brands to a range of our customers. But equally, in Tamworth, we've got a business where we are effectively a quasi-supplier. We own product brands. Crucial Trading is probably the most well-known. But there are a number of brands in there where we've got a unique point of differentiation that we need to leverage as time goes on. We've been prudently run for 25 years and we've got a strong cash position. And I know that's really important. And for many years, we've offered a national next-day delivery service, which has been a differentiator in the market. Our competitors are beginning to catch up on that, so therefore we've got to work out how we stay ahead. And also, we've got a really strong set of colleagues. We've got a long-served group of people in the business who are real experts in the flooring industry, and we've got to make sure that we make the best of that. However, as we started to examine the business a bit more closely, we found there were some significant opportunities for us. Headlam has always traditionally focused on a limited part of the market. We've primarily focused on our core customer groups of independent high street retail, local contractors and fitters. Whilst we do have customers from other segments in the market, we've not really focused on the opportunity and developed the best ways of addressing it. We do deal with online, but the challenge is because we've not focused on it, we're not doing it as efficiently with the right level of service. So there are further opportunities there. The other factor we need to think about is we've always assessed our position, market position based on the distribution element of the flooring market. There are opportunities, however, to compete not only with suppliers, but also with retailers who are sourcing direct from overseas. And we'll talk a bit about that later today. Ian and Farron will particularly talk about that opportunity. Given the acquisitive nature of Headlam, and just building on Steve's point, it has become complex structurally and systemically. And that has led to a number of inefficiencies operationally that we need to resolve. Some of these examples came up quite early on, and we'll talk and Rob will talk about transport in a bit of detail today. But to give you a sort of brief example, in Manchester, we have on average 5 or 6 delivery vehicles going in every day from as far as Leeds and Birmingham. And what that drives is with long stem mileage to get to Manchester and light payloads, our vehicles are not as efficient as they might be. So by changing how we operate, we'll be able to drive efficiencies into that large part of our business. Talk about that in a bit of detail in a moment. Similar challenges exist in inventory and in the sales team, and Ian will talk about sales shortly. All of our businesses operate independently as independent P&Ls, and this is to be encouraged because actually the entrepreneurial spirit is a key factor in Headlam's success over the time. However, with very limited guide rails, what it means is we're unable to leverage our group scale as well as we might, either both on the buy side and on the sell side. So our suppliers generally benefit from the fact that we haven't got a huge level of coordination in what we buy, and therefore they can sell to each branch, and that's something we need to resolve. We want to put in guide rails, but without taking away control of local buying. We also see the same on the sales side, where we've got our own businesses not only competing with the competition, but competing with each other, and sometimes competing on price. And Ian and Farron will talk about how we address that and resolve some of that. At the moment, we act small, which may be appropriate for some of our core customer groups, but for our suppliers and our large customers, that might not be the right approach. The last thing, and I think it was the one I found sort of most surprising, is that our processes and systems are not as developed as I thought they might be for a market leader. The business has admirably developed people from within. However, the implication is that some of our thought leadership has been slower than other people in the market or in other markets. We lag behind in operational thinking, and to give you an idea around that, we run a fleet of, or we did run a fleet of over 400 vehicles. However, we've not got the modern skills and systems that allow us to do that in a most effective way where we could optimise regularly. So all these opportunities also for efficiency. Equally, our investment in our core equipment has been slow. We've got many core bits of equipment, cutting tables and MHE being the two main things that we have in terms of large expenditure items. A lot of them are more than 15 years old. And what we're now doing is addressing that. And we've invested in a new table in Coleshill, which is being put in as we speak. And we've replaced a lot of MHE this year to underpin reliability and efficiency. So we're operating fully the whole time. So I suppose the great news from a Headland point of view is there are really strong business fundamentals, but there's also a significant opportunity to develop top line growth, improve margin, and do it all more efficiently and more reliably. On joining, as you might imagine, I undertook a sort of deep dive into our operational KPIs and looked at all of these things, and that's driven out some of the efficiency programmes. However, one of the really important pieces of work that we did was around our customers. We used LEC to support us, sizing the whole market at distributor value. And when you use customer insight agencies to do qualitative and quantitative research on our customers and the wider customer base. This analysis of the customer base identifies seven customer types or segments. All of them have slightly differing needs from each other, and we have estimated the market size and the opportunity for Headlam in each one. And what I'll do is just talk through each one individually. So if we talk about traditional retailers, this is customers Headlam's core segment. We have high share, and hence on the chart it's denoted with a green box showing that we've got high share. These are traditional independent high street retailers whose sales we need to protect and grow. This is about having the right products at the right price and delivering a great service. We do need to continue developing propositions for them, and one such thing is the most recent upgrade of all of our B2B websites, which is a key part of what their proposition is. The segment is made up of many small accounts and is where our competition is probably most active. The second segment, the progressive retailers, these are an emerging sub-segment of traditional high street retail. This is a type of retailer that not only really stocks flooring, but also soft furnishings, fabric, and accessories. They sell a look and a feel, a lifestyle. These customers are generally younger, more digitally savvy, and require the same level of service as traditional, but are looking for a slightly different product set, slightly higher end. This is a relatively small segment at the moment, but has growth potential, and we need to develop our ranges and our technology to support that group. Again, we've got reasonable market share, but not high. The next segment is another core segment, tradespeople and fitters who supply. This segment incorporates a number of different specific customer groups, from fitters to people that do property repair to local contractors. They are core customers to our trade counter offer, and we have got strong market share. These customers are anchored around the needs of flooring fitters, i.e. those guys that, and girls that run around in vans and are mobile, but have got a wider group than that. Ian will talk later about the trade counter developments that we've been taking. And actually, on the tour, you'll see our trade counter here, which has been refitted for the new format. Rob will also talk about the digital agenda we've got for this group of customers as well. Again, this is a relatively large segment and we've got a strong share, but there are absolutely opportunities for growth by improving our coverage and developing our ranges for these customers. The next segment is contractors. This is a large segment, one of the largest segments we've got. We've got a reasonable share in it, but not high share. We need to spend more time understanding what's required in this segment. It's quite complex. At the highest level, this could be represented by large government contracts or local authorities. And whilst we know the product mix is different, there's more work we need to understand about some of the procurement processes in this group because they're quite elongated. Large house builders. This is a medium-sized segment, and we've got really low share. So this is really a new opportunity for us. We believe, having spoken to a number of these customers, that we could offer a compelling service for them by bundling up a full range of flooring products and delivering them at time-specific moments for them to fit the houses. What this will do is take away their reliance on inventory and provide them with a convenient way of delivering flooring into their jobs, just at the point they're trying to convert the house from a project into a sale. So it's really, really important. Major multiple retailers. This segment we do already do some work in, and Farron does it through the national business. And Farron will talk about this opportunity in a lot more detail later. This is one of the biggest segments available to us, and we do have a relatively low share. And having been a supply chain and distribution director in a large multiple retailer, I think this, I can see that we've got a fantastic proposition for that group of people. The key thing is going in and selling the right service at the right level. At the moment, we go in and sell ranges to buyers, and we really need to go in at commercial director and supply chain director level to create a relationship around delivering a supply chain solution. I have to say, as a retail supply chain director or distribution director, the last thing I would have wanted running through my network would have been large, bulky, non-core items that would take up a lot of space and be difficult to handle. So I think there is an opportunity there. The last segment is online. Clearly, everybody knows that this is a growth segment. COVID, I think, has accelerated the opportunity, and our customers are reporting an 18% increase in online activity, a lot of which has been done through social media. For us, this is still a relatively small segment, and we still have relatively small share, but we know it's growing quickly. A key part of this is to realise that this segment is only partly about selling the product. Key part of the sale in online is about digital integration and customer service delivering products on behalf of retailers to consumers. So it's quite a different proposition. So in summary, having clarity on all of these segments and the opportunities they present will allow us to build really good customer-facing plans and help support further top-line growth. In certain segments, we're really well developed and are delivering things that will change the propositions for these customers. In a couple of segments, we've got a bit more work to do to identify what the opportunities are. We need to ensure that all of these propositions are right for each segment, and really importantly, they don't conflict with our core customer group. This is where our breadth of product and our coverage helps us deconflict some of these things. So how are we going to deliver it? So as Steve alluded to, we've created an operational improvement plan. And in order to do that, we will work to ensure that the programme delivers a substantial amount of change across the whole of the business. The first thing we've done is quite a lot of analysis to identify the opportunities, and we've identified 8 million of savings. We're working at the moment on identifying the revenue and quantifying the revenue opportunities. It's been really important that we've blended existing Headlam knowledge and experience with new change capability to deliver the programme. A number of the people that are delivering this programme are new heads into the business, but all of their project teams are populated with existing Headlam colleagues. We've got a very structured programme in place, and it's got milestones, and we've got all the appropriate tracking and governance that you would expect of a large programme. And importantly, on all of the projects, we're involving our colleagues and, most importantly, our customers in defining what we're doing and how we go about it. We're now at the stage where we've got multiple projects being delivered, and obviously we'll talk about a number of those today. We also see that there are further opportunities around product, stock, and suppliers that we'll update you later in the year. So the outcomes of the programme are effectively what we're doing is we'll support the longer term success of the business by responding not only to cost savings, but the shifts in the market. It will not only focus on costs, but also on revenue opportunities. We're also already seeing some of the cost savings flow through, and we are on track to deliver the 7.5% run rate that we've committed to. So moving on, before I finish, what I would like to do is just talk about network consolidation. And as I say, this is a picture of the building we're in before it was opened. The building was operational in July 2020. It was delayed a couple of months due to some travel restrictions. A lot of the equipment comes from Holland, and the Dutch engineers were restricted in travel. So July was when we opened it. It was completed on budget for £26 million. And what we were able to do is relocate the long-established Faithfuls business, which was just down the road in Hadley. And of course, this site is near to London, allows us to service London, and is also close to ports of entry from stuff that gets shipped in from overseas. It's 190,000 square feet, so it is a sizable building. It's got capacity of 30,000 rolls and 9,000 pallets, with modern tables and sortation that improve our efficiency. As you'll go around the building today, you'll see there are further opportunities for growth within this building. The construction was on a brownfield site, so we've redeveloped a brownfield site. And we're using solar panels and other energy-saving measures to ensure that we reduce our environmental footprint. Lights are LED. A lot of the warehouse lighting is provided by ambient light. So these are important things that reduce our drain on power. In terms of network consolidation, what did this site provide us the opportunity to do? Well, effectively, the benefit is that we were able to consolidate six other sites into one location in the southeast. We've accelerated the consolidation into half one of 2021 for two reasons. One, primarily to allow us to achieve the benefits earlier. And secondly, to reduce the period of uncertainty for our colleagues who were affected by this in those other sites. We've retained our customer-facing brands, sales teams and trade counters. So whilst the sales office, warehousing and transport have all been consolidated, our customers still have a familiar brand and people to trade with, and that's important. We took the opportunity to repurpose Strood, which is down in Rochester, and that's now going to house the Domus inventory, which we've moved out of West London. And in doing this, we've raised £7 million through the property sales. The benefit of the business in financial terms is £1 million into the P&L, but what we're also expecting to see is improved service to our customers with simplified deliveries and increased stock and throughput capacity across the whole of the southeast region. So in summary of the operational improvement plan, we've created a programme that is firmly underway and delivering projects at this moment, many of which you'll get some detail on in a moment. We have accelerated some elements of the plan as a result of where we are in COVID. We've done the work to identify significant revenue opportunities across a range of customer segments, as well as the ongoing efficiency measures. And we've also got opportunities beyond what we talk about today, particularly in the supply chain. What I'll now do is pass to Ian Leonard, who will talk us through what we've been doing on Salesforce effectiveness. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Adrian. Good morning. So we've got two of us on Salesforce effectiveness. I'm going to start and just talk about the broad market and what we're doing across all of the sales team. Then I'm going to pass you across to Farron, who's going to talk to you about our multiple retailer channel. And then it's back to me to talk about the other channels and the future. So in the same way that Adrian talked about himself first, we've each got a slide just to explain our credentials. So my experience is all about leading large sales teams where there's a high customer base, and in particular where there's a change in those sales teams around moving from what is a predominantly a face-to-face contact with a sales rep to a multi-channel approach through phone touch and e-commerce and digital touch, and blending those three things together. That you can see I've done in all four of those organisations you see at the bottom. In addition to that, where the proposition has moved away from a relationship and price conversation to more of a broader value proposition, again, is a common theme across each of those organisations that you see. And perhaps most importantly, the big change in each of those organisations was a cultural change in each of those sales teams. To find out how we become a more humble and a more grounded organisation, always looking for what is better for themselves and the organisation at all opportunities. So I came and joined the business this time last year, so I've been here just a little over a year. And when I first arrived, our sales teams had a number of traits that I'd just like to bring alive now. The first is, if you look on the right-hand side, and relate back to what Adrian said about the segments, we had an overemphasis of resource on those four segments where we had a higher share, and only had, as you can see, 14 heads on those three big segments on the right-hand side of the chart, multi-retailers, online, and house builders, and yet that's probably about half the market. Then in those four segments, we had a predominantly relationship and price conversation with our customers. And that included in these product brands, where we have a distinctive product range that should be differentiated from the general distribution brands. So our go-to-market conversation was really around relationship and price and trying to gain business on that basis across all of the 60 brands that we're operating in. Reps had to do 8 calls a day, and they had to cover all customers, regardless of size and opportunity, every 6 weeks. Which was very much constraining what they did and the freedom to allow them to go and hunt new business. So there was therefore little time focused on trying to establish new business across all of the 24,000 customers that we trade with. And of course, as Adrian's already talked about, we've got a setup where there's duplicate calling by all of the brands across the same customers, which is inefficiency in its own right. And there really wasn't a coaching culture in the organization at all. Very little documentation about what good looks like and indeed how to make a change. And the sales leaders tended to look after the bigger accounts rather than get into coaching the sales team on how to improve their own performance. So that's what we looked like this time last year. Then, as Adrian said, the first thing that we did was establish the size of the market. He's told you it's a £3 billion market, including all of the sales that went direct from manufacturer to our customers. And we've, as Adrian said, established the size and our share in each of those, which allows us to then work out where we then point our resource. And then specifically, the biggest segment out there is this multiple retailer channel, where we are underpenetrated. We only have 10% share of that channel. And as you may remember from Adrian's slide, we have 20% share across the whole of the market. So we're very much underpenetrated, and we have a very exciting, unique, we think unique proposition because of our size and because of our logistics and supply chain capability to service this market in a way that no one else can get after. So with that, I'm going to pass you across to Farron, who's just going to talk into that and explain how that works.
So following on and keeping in theme with everybody else, my name's Farron. I run National Carpets. I'm the commercial director of National Carpets, which is one of Headlam's businesses situated in Rochdale, just outside of Manchester. So I started with Headlam 17, 18 months ago. And prior to that, I had 20 years experience working for three of the large multiple flooring retailers, Allied Carpets, Carpetright and SCS. Throughout those 20 years, I've held various roles, which include retail management, retail operations, head of buy-in, right through to director of flooring. Hopefully, I bring a wealth of industry knowledge and retail knowledge to help improve the way we here at Headlam manage our group multiple accounts. We'll go through in a little bit more detail kind of how we do it currently and what we're looking at going forward. The term that's used, whether I agree or not, is kind of poacher turned gamekeeper, which we think we can play to our strengths. And it was kind of during my time of trading with Headlam, prior to joining Headlam, I was spending in the region of about £6 million. It gave me an insight into how Headlam operates. And it was that was the lure to get me here. You know, I realised how inefficient they were, realised the opportunity and how we can do things better. And I wanted to be part of it. So that's the reason why I joined. So I think Ian touched on, using our LEK data, the market size is roughly £1 billion in this sector. Currently, only 10% of Headlam's revenue is won in this area. So as a result of the low penetration, it really does give us a huge opportunity. We currently work with 21 multiple retailers, as we call them, and we've got an immediate target list of 33 where we know the proposition works and would be of a good mix. I'll talk a little bit more around targets and some of our achievements a bit later on. So I was asked to talk a little bit around how we currently handle our group multiple accounts. And I felt the best way to do this was sharing a small story with you guys from my previous experience in one of my buying roles. So as I said, I was spending around £6 million a year with Headlam, and that was through four different businesses. The kind of starting point for me, which I found was a bit odd, was why Headlam consistently sent, and as Ian alluded to, every 6 to 8 weeks, four people to visit me. They may have nothing to show me, they may have nothing to say to me, but as part of their call cycle, they were just coming around to see me. And that was 4 hours, every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, where really it was kind of a non-meaningful conversation. Some other areas that we highlighted, as Adrian alluded to, you know, each business is ran in its own separate way. If a particular business only sells carpet, very rarely would they introduce any other areas of our business to offer complementary products such as laminate floor. So they'd only ever sell the carpet or the product that they have in their organisation. They wouldn't introduce on the fear that someone's going to take their biscuits or take their dinner and not share across the group. It really was a very disjointed, horrible, I hate to use that word, but it was a very horrible experience for a buyer to deal with Headlam, who are the market leader. The approach, as I say, is all centred around commercials. It was always priced, it was always product. There was no strategic thinking or a partnership working together for the best of both businesses. It was very much the here and now, can I get a sale and can I get it today? We needed to change what we did. You'll all be pleased to know we have changed. We don't do that anymore. So our vision at the offset was to kind of focus on four key areas. We wanted to treat our customers as individuals, to target them with individual propositions that worked for their business, but also worked for Headlam. It wasn't just a one-way street. As I said, we wanted to have a group approach, so we wanted to stop this nature of having four or five or six different Headlam representatives at different levels, where we had salespeople speaking to buying directors, we had directors speaking to... It was just completely misaligned. We needed to draw a line in the sand and have one senior representative from Headlam to deal with the one senior representative in these multiple businesses. We also, you know, with the main vision was just to capture more share. As Ian said, we've got a very, very small penetration in this area. I wasn't surprised, if I was being honest, because of the principles and the processes that we adopted. There's such a huge opportunity for us to capture more market share, providing we get things right. We've also recently started to look at a lot of our customers who are buying direct from manufacturers. This is an area that we haven't touched historically, and we know around £300 million worth of business is spent direct with our suppliers, direct with the manufacturers, through our core customers. So we're starting to attack that and look at that over the coming months. So it was really important that we took time to understand why Headlam would be a good fit. You know, why would they want to use us and not go direct to manufacturers? Where was our value add? How could we save that retailer both effort and also revenue? So we're aware, post-COVID and pre-COVID, that retailers are facing into serious storage challenges. As Adrian alluded to, flooring is very heavy, it's large, it's bulky, it's very hard to handle. Now, if these businesses allow us to handle that on their behalf, they have a lot more space to free up fast-moving items, to focus on fast-moving lines that are more in demand at that particular time, so more seasonal purchases. You know, it's also very important that they understand the time and the effort that it takes to manage those goods. Now, we will remove the need to have the transport, the space, and also the manpower required to load and unload at both ends. That is a real strong proposition to offer to some of these customers. We have our best-in-class supply chain. You know, we can deliver direct to each of the sites individually. We don't need to go direct to a DC and drop off and allow them to move it. We have the ability to deliver next day to every single location individually. A really key USP for these big multiple retailers. The advantage of not being a manufacturer and being a distributor is the insight. We have insight through our breadth of products into what's selling in the marketplace. What are the on-trend colors? What are the on-trend products that we can offer these customers? By dealing with a manufacturer, it is very much a one way. Our business is fantastic, everybody else's isn't so good. We have the ability to remove the bias and offer them products that suit their needs and their customers' needs, not what we just want to sell you. The additional benefits, and we've touched on at the bottom here, is a lot of the PLCs and large multiples, they love the ability to deal with other PLCs to gain the benefits of financial strength, compliance, governance, you know, ESG, very on point currently. And you know, whilst dealing with the buying directors, you know, it's something that they feel a security blanket with. So we knew we had a problem. We knew we had the solution to fix it. What have we done about it? We've recently recruited a senior group of multiple account managers. The team consists of members from both internal and external backgrounds. And we haven't just focused on people like myself who are just inundated with flooring knowledge. We've looked at people from other industries and other backgrounds. So we have some people in the team who have got travel, cosmetics, supermarket background in retailing. So when they're dealing with these multiple buyers, it's retail experience that they've got in common, not just I have the flooring knowledge, you don't. It seems to be a lot more transparent, and the relationship and the conversations flow a lot more thorough. We are currently working through the 21 group customers, as I touched on earlier on, and we're doing a handover with each of the sites who are managing those customers currently. And then we're working in collaboration with the site leads, just going through their understanding of the customer and doing a smooth transitional handover. We're also then starting to meet the customers and work with them to understand their business needs and the opportunities that are out in front of us. The team are very focused on five new key metrics. We're focusing on improving the relationships with our current customers, improving our operating margin. It shouldn't be difficult if we remove the internal competition. Improving our revenue, improving our service, and also targeting new customers. I wanted to share with you, just by getting our approach right, by getting our ducks in a line in-house what the rewards could be. So recently, we've partnered with one of the UK's largest home improvement retailers, 230 stores in the UK. I personally went and met with the buying director there, and the conversation was very interesting. So he'd been approached by lots of people, and when we got to speak around Headlam, he really had no clue over who we were. I found that odd. We're Europe's largest flooring distributor, and he had no clue over who we were. I still couldn't get my head around. I still can't to this day. He had a challenge on one specific underlay product. And, you know, as usual, he had one supply. That supply post-COVID was very difficult to get hold of. Due to the size of Headlam, we had three suppliers of that particular product. So we started to talk through margins, commercials, what does it need to look like? And we managed to secure that range into his business in all 230 stores as a live range for the remainder of 2021. That one range, one SKU, will generate over £500,000 of extra revenue. Just one range. If we could do that a few times, the difference to our top line is incredible. Just by making sure we do things right. Additionally, we've got the ability to, you know, we've got an open account now. We're starting to work together in collaboration and in partnership. So we've got the ability to introduce and to open up the conversation to new products going forward, which we're in conversation with now. So that £500,000 could grow quite quickly. So in summary, we've got a great proposition. We've got a great business. We now have a great team doing great things. It's not just flooring retailers who buy flooring. We partner with DIY merchants, value retailers, garden centres. There's £1 billion opportunity here. Just a 10% win in this sector for us is £100 million top line sales. We will get some. Thank you. I'll hand you back over to Ian.
Super, thanks, Farron. So as you can see, Farron and I are really excited about this because this is where a lot of our growth is going to come from. And the beautiful thing is we can tailor the proposition to meet the needs of the customer. If they're not interested in moving bulky, difficult products around, we can move to the other propositions. However, we can't just look at the stuff going forward. We've got to make sure we protect and indeed grow in the traditional segments where we've been strong. So those four on the left-hand side, the traditional and progressive retailers, the contractors, and the fitters and tradespeople who supply. So what are we doing in that area? So the first thing on the top left there is we are tightening up the propositions and the service and range for those particular customers. So in the range area, we need to then be clearer about what it is that we should be ranging for the general distribution customers, and indeed work out how we improve, part through the network consolidation information that you've already heard from Adrian, but just make our service the best in class. As the biggest floor covering distributor in the UK and indeed in Europe, we should be able to get our service to be world class and beyond the competition. So we've got to tighten all those up, and there's a lot of work being done in that area already. The second part of that is then tell the story to our customers about our range and our service. At the moment, the conversation is very loose. It's all words, and it's all based on their history and experience, rather than turning it into, this is why our range and our service proposition saves you time and money. On the right-hand side at the top there, there's some work to be done on pricing. We need to get better and consistent pricing into the market. Now, that is complicated because of the approach we have in the market, because of all the different businesses, but we can give ranges and we can control it more centrally through all the sales leaders, and that's something that we're looking at right now. On the bottom left, we've talked about these product brands, these brands in Tamworth that Adrian mentioned. We have to be clearer about what is their product proposition that's differentiated against the general distribution brands and get them targeting specifically in that area. We're doing some work on that only next week. And then the last bit on the bottom right-hand side, I'm not going to get into in any great detail because you'll hear a lot more about this from Rob in a moment, but we have to move more people onto the B2B website, and we have to get more propositions in the digital area that support some of those segments, and you'll hear about the customer app for one of the segments from Rob shortly. So that's all work that we're doing at the moment. However, what we've done, and this is probably the most exciting bit, if you're a sales rep and you've been constrained by coverage and call rate metrics, we have released that. I've done this in all four sectors and all four organisations that I've been in the past, and this is the thing that makes the sales reps really excited, and it's working here already. So what we have said to them is that they are in control of where they spend their time and how they contact their customers. So they have circa 150, 200 customers each. And it's up to them to establish the potential with each of those customers. They already know what their sales are with those customers, and then spend the appropriate time holding on to the revenue they've got and winning new business. Now, automatically, if they haven't got very much business, or they don't have a big opportunity, or they can't get it, they're therefore going to spend very little time with them. So that might mean they visit hardly at all, or they visit them via a phone or a digital touch via email. All of that just frees up time for them to go after new business and them to be a true business leader looking after a territory in their own right. And they love it. And they're starting to love it here already. Now, as part of that process, it's allowed us to take the opportunity to take out 68 heads. And that just feeds straight away through to the bottom line. So going forward, the exciting future that we've got has got a number of things that we think we want to go and have a look at. Obviously, as we learn more, we'll understand the propositions and how they work in each of the different sectors. So in particular, the proposition that Farron articulated, we think that will work in a number of other sectors. Adrian mentioned house builders. We think the national contractors also will benefit from that proposition. On the right-hand side there, we need to understand more about how we then realign the resource behind those segments. So you've already heard that we've invested in the multiple retailer channel. We need to move more of our resource away from our traditional customer segments and move them into those opportunity segments. We've started to reduce the duplicate callage, partly by the new way of working, but now we can have sight of this with the central sales operations team. We can see where the duplicate calling is happening and start to unpick that. And I've now created a team, a virtual team of the 50 sales leaders across all the business, and we're working on how we then unpick some of that duplication without changing the way of working that we have across the business. And then perhaps most difficultly and perhaps most excitingly, how do we create this development culture in the organisation where all reps, all leaders, all people across the sales organisation are always thinking about, as I said earlier, what's best for them and what's best for the organisation at all times. So we think we've got a really exciting opportunity and future in the sales team, and we look forward to talking to you more about that as we get into it. That's it from Salesforce Effectiveness. I'm now going to pass you across to Ian, who's going to talk to you about our trade counters.
Hello, my name's Ian Crick, and I joined Headlam 18 months ago to lead the trade counter program. I just want to spend a bit of time to update you where we're up to so far. But first, I need to go through the introductions and background. So my background is in food retail. I spent most of my career in retail operations and delivering large change programs. And it's the large change programs experience in particular, I think, that's relevant for the work that I've been asked to do in Headlam. I worked in Tesco for 27 years. And I've highlighted a couple of my roles that I think are relevant in particular to the trade counter programme. I was part of the Express leadership team in the early days when it was a brand new format and convenience was a new concept. I managed the rollout programme for them for 5 years. So I opened nearly 600 sites and we built a footprint of a £1.5 billion business. So I'm really delighted to be here as part of the Headlam team, and I'm looking forward to hopefully bringing some of that experience to bear on landing a very exciting trade counter programme. But a bit of background first, in terms of the trade counter opportunity. So what we know is that the end consumer is changing their flooring far more frequently now than they ever used to. And that increase in activity means that our fitters and contractors are increasingly busy. And that's telling us that market for trade counters is increasing. And we believe there's a gap in the market for a truly national trade counter operation, a network of flooring trade counters that can offer national click and collect to all its customers and provide a consistent format of well-stocked ranges, specialist ranges for our flooring specialists. That physical presence will allow us to increase market penetration locally and give us better access to the national contractor market. So when we hit that national presence, all of a sudden, a new set of people become open to us. So our aspiration, to put it simply, is to build a £200 million business through 90 trade counters, serving more customers, selling more products, on better terms. So I just want to break that down bit by bit, because that's a bit quick. So we're targeting £120 million of additional sales. So where are we going to get that from? So the first of all will be from new locations. So looking at new sites in new locations to absolutely maximise sales in that catchment area. In new business, in new trade counters that take at least £1.6 million turnover. We'll also extend and refit existing sites. So where we're happy they're in the right location, but we need to change the format. As you'll see downstairs, we've changed how Ipswich is set up. We're looking to improve the offer for our local customers in our existing footprint. And where the sites are either too small or they're in the wrong location, we'll look to relocate to increase sales. So 90 new and improved trade counters will give us national scale across all the major towns and cities. We're just about to conduct a data-based analysis of those target locations. So we're looking at large towns where we don't have a presence. We're looking at how many locations a large city could take. We're looking at a number of sites that are needed to support major conurbations. And we need to understand the right strategy for dealing with our customers in London. Our intention eventually is to provide a national click and collect offer. And just to explain, currently there's a click and collect offer, but the customers are tied to the business that they're ordering from. So it's, if you like, a local click and collect as opposed to a national click and collect. But our expectation is to move to that full offer so you could order in Newcastle and pick it up in Plymouth. Moving to a national network of collection points will ultimately reduce our cost to serve. We'll have fewer, larger deliveries to trade counters. We need to look beyond our traditional customer base to engage a broad range of customers. And this includes local trades who fit flooring as well as their core trade. It also includes local builders, property maintenance firms. Typically, they're going to the likes of B&Q, Wickes, Howdens, and our competitors. And we think there's a big opportunity to go after those. We also know that 50% of our existing customers don't use our counters. And I strongly believe that reflects our lack of national coverage. So actually, that presents an upside from the trade counter programme perspective. So our customers are telling us that they like to buy their tools, accessories and workwear all in one place, because that would be far more convenient for them. And that will add incremental sales to our core sales, and that will be margin enhancing. There will also be opportunities to enhance buying terms from consolidating ranges across 90 sites, and from introducing own brand ranges. So just going to talk about a discovery stage. So this has been the starting point for our programme has been to go through an understanding of the existing trade counter format to identify opportunities. And the first thing I wanted to do is actually just share a few of the learnings that kind of struck me when I first joined and have actually will be quite important in terms of the way that we manage our programme. So the first is just the huge diversity. We've touched on it a few times already. And obviously that's a result of Headlam's rapid M&A growth. So a couple of interesting things from that. 28 of the businesses we acquired had one trade counter. So there's obviously no concept of consistency across the estate. The sales floors range from 200 to 2,000 square foot. So the portfolio is quite diverse. And our busiest sites generate 20 times more sales than our smallest. So there's big diversity there. But what it does mean in our programme is, this is not just about opening new sites, this is about addressing our existing estate as well. And that will be a key part of our programme. The prevailing mindset, again, that's been touched on, is that, and especially true for trade counters, is that their focus was serving on flooring trade professionals, so fitters and contractors, to the exclusion of everyone else. But what our analysis has shown is that the everyone else is a huge, huge opportunity for us. So those tradespeople, those small builders, that is a huge opportunity that we can get after. And the final observation is just there are some capabilities that I would expect to run a national trade counter business that just aren't there. So there are some people, process, systems gaps that we just need to develop some pragmatic solutions for. And that's all in our gift. So I had the pleasure, actually, because it was kind of great fun as we went. I worked with three of really experienced general managers to make sure that the work that we did was absolutely grounded in reality, and that the recommendations that we were going to put forward would absolutely fit within the business. One of the first parts we've done, which is what I was doing in Tesco, which is look at the customer first. It's really clear from all of the data, from the customer panels that we ran, and from a wider range of customer information, it's really clear. They just want us to deliver convenience. They want quick service. They want to get in and out. They want a one-stop shop to make it easier and stop them having to go somewhere else because they don't have the time. They want ranges that are absolutely geared up for what they need. They want access to expert advice, and we have got some fantastic experts behind the counter. Their knowledge is really fantastic. But they can also facilitate getting training, get them onto training courses. And a really practical thing, they want somewhere to just unroll and re-roll and cut carpets. That's a really practical thing, but it's really top of their list. One of the things that told us, really, and we kind of knew, but it just convinced us that it was true, was that we need to move away from our old format. And we need to move away from the small trade counter, which is basically somewhere for samples, for supplier samples. The opportunity is a new blueprint, larger format, more stock product, more things that our customers want, stock ranges that make it really convenient for them. Another part of the discovery phase was basically to develop a model or a set of principles that means that when we start to move forward, and whether we're doing refits or whether we're looking for new sites, that we're setting our sites up with the same principles. And I'm just going to call a couple out here because there are a couple here that are kind of duplicated already. One is that we have an entrepreneurial trade counter manager that is absolutely set up to maximise the opportunity locally. So not someone just sat behind the counter, someone who's out there and giving them the tools, the car, all of the equipment that they need to be able to do that job locally. The second one is to invest up front. So very often I found that sites will hold off that extra person in the trade counter from a profit point of view, but actually they need to invest up front because the sites where we've seen have done that, they've actually accelerated sales, and that's the model that we want to follow. So entrepreneurial trade counter manager with the resource to free them up to serve customers better. The other thing that will come into the new site location and relocations is around making sure that we're located alongside complementary trades. And so that is something that hasn't been done in the past. It wasn't a priority, and that's something that we'll be doing differently. We also built a business case model so that we can appraise individual sites financially. And I just wanted to share some of the key numbers. So for a new site, we're talking in the region of £300,000 capital investment. With the site taking over £1.6 million at maturity, then we move to profit within 2 years. And that's kind of become our kind of baseline, and we know that all works for us. When we look at relocations, we actually can save some of the capital costs because we relocate fitting and equipment, MHE, so that actually keeps our costs down. And we're exploring now the type of refits that we do. The refits are significantly cheaper. So, for example, downstairs, I think it was something like £40,000 to refit that site. So here's our roadmap. So we've just completed our discovery phase, or we've got through most of our discovery phase, and now started to turn into some action. So this year, we will have opened or refitted 12 sites. We have 5 completed, 6 underway, and 1 is in negotiation. And it's a £2 million investment for this year's programme. The reason that we've taken that approach is we've looked at different size sites, different locations, so that we can accelerate our learning of what works for trade counters. And that learning is really, really critical. And some of the things we learned from Express, which was we just took our time, but when we got the model right, we were then ready to go with something we knew was going to work. So that will help our learning. The plan is to then pause while we consolidate operations, give the trade counters time to trade properly so we can do a full financial evaluation before we then push the button on a rollout program. And that rollout program, we'd expect to see the new sites will be an accelerating program. That's something about lining up a people plan and recruiting and training new people to fall in behind that accelerating program. Refits and relocations are probably more in our gift. The relocation part of the program, we'll just tie that in with the lease renewal schedule to make sure that we pick it up at each site at the right time. Overall, we're estimating in the region of £20 million investment, so at current trade prices. It has to be said. So the reason why that is still in the region of is depending on how many sites we decide we can refit or need to relocate, that will actually have quite an impact on those numbers. So in summary, our initial focus is on establishing that 90 site network and maximising the opportunity there. At a certain point, we know that will unlock an opportunity for Ian's team with the large national contractors. So I think that if we get the model right, and as we start to learn which sites work for us, we may find that we can push way beyond the 90 sites and create even further opportunity. So very exciting place to be right now. Thank you very much.
So a little bit about myself. I'm Rob, 25 years experience in supply chain, logistics and transport, initially on the operational side, but then majority of my career on the project and development side of operations. I've held some senior change management roles in major retailers, so Tesco initially, then B&Q, and then latterly Marks & Spencer. And my role in M&S was head of e-commerce program delivery. So in terms of my specialist skill set, what I bring to the table is primarily an understanding of the end-to-end supply chain from an operational point of view, but also a technical overview as well. So hopefully a good mix and balance there from that regard. So e-commerce and digital then. So I just want to start by framing our digital strategy, which really will anchor us back to what we're trying to achieve at a holistic level. And then we'll go into the individual projects and initiatives. So four key pillars then to walk through. Firstly, and this is calling back some of the comments we've heard earlier today in terms of our own brands. So this is increasing the awareness and visibility of our own Headlam brands. Secondly, support for those major multiple customers that we've talked about, those with a big online presence or pure play online retailers. Thirdly, and this is really our core distribution customer base that again, we've talked about today. This is really our heartlands, and this is where we're doing most of our digital activity to date. In section three. And then finally, and really just for completeness, as well as external facing initiatives, we're also looking internally and looking at what processes, manual processes, we can automate. And it's a case of essentially just making us simpler, better and cheaper from internal processes and procedures as well. So I'm just going to deep dive into each one of those sections. Firstly, in terms of digital, quite simply, we think digital is going to drive growth and be a real lever that we can pull for the business going forward. We know that online sales participation in the retail sector generically is around 25 to 30%. And we know that spiked last year as a result of the pandemic, and that's been sustained, broadly speaking. It's true to say that the floor coverage sector is lagging behind. We know most of the reasons for that, primarily demographic based. But that will accelerate and that will move forward. So we have to set ourselves up for success now. So we're well poised to strike going forward because it's a bit of a journey we need to go on. And we're going to target those categories that we know we're under-indexed on, and we've heard all about those today already. And significantly, we know that digital platforms have a much lower cost to serve. Okay, so what are we looking to achieve then? So I guess from my personal perspective, the vision is that our customers can interact and trade with us how they choose, when they choose. So an omni-channel experience, as we'd call it. So a customer can either order via phone, can use the trade counter, whatever channel they want to use, B2B websites. They have a clean experience, it's personalized to them, and it's seamless. It's a joined-up experience, so omni-channel. And importantly, we need to make it in a digital space, friction-free. So we want to remove any obstacles and barriers to trade with us from a technological perspective. And the personalization piece, again, for me personally, is something I really want to drive forward on, is the personalization. So if we understand our customers, we understand their business, and we understand their customers in turn, they're much more likely to be loyal to us and trade with us. And then finally, in order to achieve this quite ambitious vision, we obviously need the capability and skill set. Now, we've got that in-house and we're developing that as we go. It's a question of a hybrid model. So we want to partner with the right external agencies. So where we've got gaps in our specialist skill set, we choose the right partners, and then building our capability internally as well as we move forward. So it's a bit of a hybrid approach. So if we go back to the strategy then, and we'll just focus on each of those categories briefly. So our own brands. So we've got a number of end consumer facing websites. Okay. Now these are non-transactional websites. However, the customer does have the ability on most of our websites to order some samples, and we'll also refer them to local retailers. And then we'll convert that sale through the sell-through. So this is about making sure that our own brands, which I think have been, perhaps haven't got that visibility that we would like, really turbocharging that effort and making sure that when customers go on and do their Google search, our brands become top of Google search pages. And there's two other elements as well we need to focus on. One is social media, which we know from our research is becoming increasingly important in our sector and retail generally. And we need to really increase the quality of our postings, the content, the tone, and the narrative to make sure we're professional, we're joined up, and we're targeted. And then the website content itself. So this is slightly different to our traditional B2B websites, in as much as we need to make sure those websites are built technically so that we do get towards the top of those Google rankings. So we hit all those technical sweet spots to make sure that when the end consumer is on Google searching, we get towards the top of the rankings. And this is one of those examples where we haven't got that internal skill set yet. We're developing it, but we're partnering with external agencies. So that's our own brands. So secondly, our major multiples and our pure play online retail customers. Now, typically, these customers require a deeper level of integration, of technical integration, than our other smaller customers. So we do utilize at the moment EDI technology, so fairly straightforward technology, quite old now, but does the job and does the job well in order to exchange information such as stock, ordering and invoicing, but we want to go further. So what we're doing is we are implementing a suite of four interconnected systems, which we're terming an e-com platform, which will give us that step change. What that will do is allow us to integrate with major customers quickly and also do business with them much more efficiently going forward. So we can surface them with the right information, the right data flows in a timely fashion, and we can onboard customers much more quickly. So when Farron and his team do the great work to get these major multiple customers in, technically in the background, we can hook up to them much quickly. There's four elements that we're delivering there. Now, in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through all four. I'm just going to pick out two that we think are pertinent. The first one is product information management, or PIM, because we love an acronym. Now, this is a real game changer for us, a real enabler for the rest of the business. So at the moment, we have an issue with our data, with our product master data. Okay, it's not optimized by any stretch of the imagination. So it is suboptimal. So it's localized and it's fragmented. So we're able to set up products on our systems and we are able to trade, but there are sometimes gaps in that data. There may be gaps in technical attributes, gaps in quality of photos, etc. So it's very hard for us to really quickly engage and make sure that our customers can surface our products onto their websites. So what we're doing is we're cleansing all our data, first of all, to make sure it's fit for purpose. We're then going to load it into one central repository. So that'll be one version of the truth. And as we all know, in any business, data is king. So if we get to that position, we've got one version of the truth, all our products with codes, all our products with all the associated attributes. We can then select those attributes that any customer wants and fire it to them almost immediately, so they can then surface it onto their websites for their customers. It's a really quick integration. And this is not just for e-commerce, this is an enterprise-wide solution. So we're talking about e-commerce in this section, but this is enterprise-wide, it's a game changer. So secondly, customer relationship management. So this is calling back the comments I made earlier about personalization. So this in essence is targeting customers with timely communication and relevant communication. And again, it's a fine art and we've got to get the balance right. But if, let me give you an example, it might be a re-engagement exercise. So if we've got customers who've lapsed and haven't traded with us for, let's say, 3 to 6 months, we can re-engage those customers quickly with a targeted email campaign. And again, it's making sure we get the balance right. So it's not too much, but it's just targeted, it's personal, and we understand our customers' business and re-engage them. And there's many other opportunities in that space as well. So that's just two of the main elements I wanted to bring out for you. So moving forward then, this is really our heartlands from a digital perspective. And the backbone of our digital offering to date has been B2B websites. So where are we on our B2B websites? So we are targeting an average web sales participation of a minimum of 30%. Now, if you think back to what I said at the start of the presentation, that's essentially the retail standard at the moment, and we want to get parity with that and then move forward beyond. It is quite an aggressive, punchy target, but we think we've got the levers we can pull to achieve it. So if you look at where we've come from, and you can see there on the graph at the bottom is 2018, moving through to where we are today. From a base of around about 10 or 11%, we've now grown to 16% participation. And when I looked last week, it's up to 17% now. So we are growing, it's on an upward curve as a sales participation. We're also investing in those websites as well. So they've been around for quite a while, but we're investing heavily in those websites to make them slicker, easier to use, and easy to navigate for our customers. So we've got a batch of new features that we're releasing over the course of this month to all our 60 plus B2B websites. And we also relaunched the websites late last year to give them a slicker, more modern feel. And the final stat on this page really, which is a really interesting one that resonated with us, was the reason we think there's still a step change achievable that we can make here in this space is a customer survey showed us that approximately 30% of our customers were not even aware that we had transactional websites, which was quite a stark number for us and was a bit of a revelation. So although that's disappointing on one extreme, does give us that opportunity to make a step change if we can convert just a relatively modest number of those people to start trading on our B2B platforms, we can make a step change, okay? Now, in terms of the last project I want to talk to you, or the last initiative I want to talk to you today, is one that we're particularly excited about, which we think is a real enabler for us going forward and a step change. And it's the first time we've spoken about this externally. And that is our new app. So, which we're branding My Headlam app. So this is a feature-rich, fully transactional trade app, primarily targeted at our more mobile customers, so our fitter and contractor community. Now, we're deep in the development already, and we're towards the end of the journey, but you can see there, it just gives you a flavor for the look and feel. Very modern, very crisp, easy to navigate for the customers as well. We put a lot of effort into making sure that it's user-friendly and easy to use and intuitive. Now, the catalyst for the app was actually our customers. So again, we had a lot of feedback, a lot of customer survey feedback, a lot of anecdotal feedback through the teams, saying, particularly from the fitter community, as I say, calling out for an app, saying, look, if we really had an app, when we're mobile, when we're on the go, when we're in our end consumer houses and premises trying to make a sale, it'd be great if we had an app. Our websites are mobile optimized, but it's not the same experience as an app, which is purpose built to be quick and efficient. We've got a lot of rich features, so it's heavily personalized. So again, customer can go on and tailor it to their requirements. We've got a powerful search engine, real-time availability and pricing, which is specific to that customer. So you will see your pricing instantly on the app. And it's transactional, so they can order on it as well. And then a couple of nice technical tools as well. So one is a room measurement tool, which allows a fitter to capture the measurements of the room, select the product, and then it will suggest how much product they need. So it'll do the hard work for them, essentially. And you can add some tolerances, et cetera, as well. So again, it's just about making things easy and slick and taking away some of that effort or that manual task. The other thing is, the other real benefit for us is that we're developing it in-house with our own IT partners. Apps usually are very expensive, so we're keeping the cost low, but also it gives us the flexibility and agility so that we're able, when we've been going back to our customers and checking in through the development lifecycle, we've been able to integrate their suggestions as we've gone forward. We've been able to pivot and change that functionality. So hopefully when we do land it, it's absolutely fit for purpose and hits the customer's needs. And we'll continue to take that approach. So when are we launching then? So we're launching, well, it'll be this month now, we're 1st of July. So it'll be in August, late August we're launching, but we're going in with a considered approach. So we're just towards the end of development and testing now, but we're going to go with a pilot group of customers. Then we'll release it soon after, and we'll do some publicity and marketing campaign as well to back that. So this is like something we're really getting behind and we're really excited. We really think it's a step change. Finally, and just for completeness, internal digitalization, as we talked about, a few examples there. We've just launched a reward and comms portal for our colleagues to engage our colleagues, give them information about what's happening in the business, and also some discounts as well with key retailers and other non-food offerings. An e-learning portal so that our training and compliance, we can distribute it quickly and we can track who's compliant and who's training and upskilling, and then auto-invoicing. So in summary then, we think by curating this suite of digital products that we've just talked about today, we think we can make a real step change and give us some real clear water between us and our competitors, a real step change and competitive advantage, coupled with our industry leading capability. And as I say, that skill set that we're going to grow over the coming months and years. Bit of a gear change here. Transport integration then. So the objective of transport integration is quite straightforward. Now, we've heard Adrian teed it up earlier in terms of some of his references and background, but what we're looking to do is consolidate all daily customer deliveries into one vehicle supplied from the nearest hub. Hardly revolutionary, granted, as an ambition, but given where we've come from, again, a real step change. So we want to maintain the next day delivery offer as a minimum. Going forward, hopefully improve it with slotted delivery some stage in the future. And we're going to roll it out on a regional basis. So the problem statement, again, I won't I'll go over all ground. Adrian's covered most of it. But our transport operations were very, very inefficient. There's no getting away from it. Duplicated overlapping deliveries, 5 deliveries a day to one customer. Most of those vehicles only about a quarter or half full. Speaks for itself, a problem and an opportunity to be solved. And also the time driving as well. So too much time driving to get to your first drop. Make your drops for the day, too much time driving back. As a problem statement, fairly straightforward. So where are we now? So we're about 70% of national coverage at the moment. We've done our 4 big regions and we'll complete our rollout early next year. I'm pleased to say we're on track to hit our stated savings of 3 million per annum. Okay, just briefly then, this visual just gives you an idea of before and after. I won't dwell on it too long in the interest of time. But you can see the old world, all our sites overlapping, huge geographical regions that each site had to cover, and long distances of travelling. And then the diagram next to it is the overnight stock moves that we need to do in order to get the right product to the right place for the next day delivery, which we call our trunking network. Move to the 2B world, and hopefully you can see there much clearer demarcation of boundaries. Everybody staying within their own geographical region, but delivering on behalf of every other business. Now, the quid pro quo for landing this new solution is that the trunking network does actually increase. So in order to get the right product to the right place at the right time, we need more movements, as you might well imagine. So there is an increase there. However, we have got initiatives to offset that, which I'll cover in a moment. So initially, our approach was to go site by site. I think we're cognizant that it's taken a while. This transport project we know has been in gestation for quite a long time. So we took the decision last year to accelerate and go on a regional basis. So the first region that we did following a successful proof of concept in Wales was in the north. And that covered 7 businesses, approximately 6,000 customers, and about a quarter of our network delivery. It was absolutely a significant step change. So even though on paper it's just a transport project, It touched people, processes, systems, and we had to do some physical infrastructure changes to our distribution centres. So quite a material change, touching most areas of the business. And ostensibly, this was about data modelling. So the whole success of the transport project, the actual vehicles out on the road driving and the drivers are one side of it, but the actual data modelling in the background to enable it was really the big enablement success story. So we took about 20,000 individual deliveries from our peak period as a data set, and we used some specialist transport software modelling to come out with various scenarios over a number of months. The output was every customer was assigned a new optimised delivery route on a new delivery run. So every single one of those 6,000 customers got a new delivery slot. So a huge piece of data science in the background. We went live in September last year in two phases so that we de-risked the operation. And in terms of results, we're in a good place, I'm pleased to say. So we removed net 30 vehicles, delivery vehicles, from the roads in the north. We also took the opportunity as well because we were very cognizant that in order to achieve this, the drivers would have to deliver more weight and do more drops. So in order to acknowledge that, we benchmark drivers' pay regionally by role, and we increase drivers' pay proportionally to acknowledge that. So we've got really engaged drivers as a result. In terms of our environmental credentials as well, which are absolutely critical, we're tracking towards 1.25 million kilometres or just short of 800,000 miles in old money, taken off the year from the north, which is a great result. And obviously the carbon emissions that will go down as a result. And importantly, the new model is significantly outperforming our old model. And you can see just a few metrics there. Deliveries per vehicle, 21% up. Orders per vehicle, 24%. And weight per vehicle, 26%. Now those stats were taken quite recently. It has been north of 30% towards the end of last year. Fluctuates based on volumes and what the business is doing, obviously. But we're seeing consistently between 25 and 30% improvements on those key metrics. So in terms of rollout and completion then, we've just gone live with the Southeast region in the last few weeks. And obviously this site was pivotal to that. And we're bedding that down at the moment and it's looking in good shape. We'll complete then with the Central region in quarter one. So we don't want to stop there though. So we will implement, but we need to evolve and enhance the solution as we go on a continuous improvement basis. So local stocking project. So this is associated with removing some of that trunking that I talked about earlier. So where we've got more moves now overnight, we need to reduce that back. So what we're doing is we're stocking locally high cube, bulky product that's low value. So typically, if you think of things like screeds and adhesives, it makes absolutely no sense to be loading those onto a vehicle in one destination, driving 100 miles, and then dropping them to another destination. It's a waste of vehicle transport. So we're going to stock them locally, those products locally at each site, and just pick them locally. Okay? And it makes absolute sense. We've gone live in the north on three sites, and we've taken quite a lot of cube off the road already. And we're going to continue to roll that out, and we'll report back to you on how that looks in due course. We're also going to look at our fleet mix as well. So typically we run 14-ton vehicles is the usual standard delivery vehicle that we run. And we need to get just a little bit cuter now about mixing and matching our fleet. So an example would be in the Northeast, where we're predominantly contract-based customers, heavier product, bulkier product. We now run 18-ton vehicles. So again, not revolutionary, but it just makes sense to just start mixing up that fleet, getting better usage, and to suit our customers better. We're invested in our people as well, so we've got to continue to train and develop our staff, the drivers, and specifically the transport managers, because this is a step change in skill set required from the transport managers. Because they've got less vehicles, less assets now, we need to be much, much more scientific about how we utilise them, particularly dealing with spikes in volume and mixing and matching our routes in day. And then finally, system tools. So everything comes back to systems for me, doesn't it? So we want to introduce a telematics system, which will then allow us to have actionable insight of what our drivers are doing. So this is about going to the next level. So this will analyse things like driver's behaviour, so acceleration, braking, idle time for vehicles, emissions, MPG. And then once we've got, again, that database of information, we can start benchmarking our drivers internally and also externally, coaching and mentoring and bringing those drivers up to the right level. And we'll get better vehicle usage, be better for the customers, and essentially more deliveries. and also hit our ESG commitments. So in summary then, consistent customer experience, one delivery, consolidated every day, reduced cost base, improved environmental credentials, employee engagement through our driver investment, and then we've got the roadmap of future investment, so we continue to evolve and develop the solution. That's it from me. I think I'll hand over to Steve now for ESG.
So I just wanted to touch upon our strategy on ESG, because whilst we spoke about what was going on in our 2020 report and accounts, which were published in March, we actually came out with our strategy in May. We started to look at where we were going, and the key to that was our materiality assessment. And we identified what our internal approach was going to be, how we were going to deal with our suppliers, but, you know, the big prize, what it meant for the industry at large. And I think the great thing is that, I mean, you just heard from Rob now on logistics, internal emissions. You know, we're making great progress on that with the initiatives that we're implementing into the business. Health and safety, when Adrian arrived, he did a deep dive on that. And again, we partnered with third-party provider to look at our health and safety standards. And out of that came the physical needs of health and safety. So, you know, when you were going around the warehouse, you know, for a start, you needed to walk in safeguarded areas. You'll have seen from the machines, the guarding to give the protection, you know, even our approach to COVID, which I have to say was quite rapid. This year now, we've moved on to the more cultural side of what health and safety means. And, you know, we need to develop that. People need to feel it. So they need to want to do it rather than it being an instruction. And, you know, we will make progress on that. Governance, Simon and Stephen bring with them, you know, an immense amount of experience and knowledge. And, you know, I'm really sure that they're going to make such a great contribution when we go forward, and be enormously helpful for what we need to do. And of course, IT resilience and cybersecurity. You know, it's a threat that we face every day, professionally and personally. We've made great strides in that area. And if we hadn't have done, you know, I think our experience late last year would have been far worse than it actually was. So, you know, we're looking at all of that stuff. There's work that we still need to do. And but I think the great thing for you guys is that we're making really good strides. And I think what's so important is that the business itself will embrace the concept. You know, Catherine spoke to our employee forum the other day, and what was really pleasing was that, you know, there was really strong enthusiasm for the work that we're doing in this area. There's some way to go, but, you know, I think we will have the support of the business and, you know, definitely the encouragement from the board. So what we will do this year, as you know, we're going to report on a semi-annual basis. We've got projects in mind that we need to do. I mean, clearly, we need to start to look at KPIs, which we've deliberately left out of the equation at the moment because, you know, we do want to take time to think about this seriously. There's no point in giving you really interesting targets if this management team can't deliver it. ESG will be incorporated into the operational improvement plan, so it will have a home. You know, we will see the development of the concept placed in the hands of a senior working group. And as I said, you know, the employee forum are really engaged. And, you know, our enlarged board will act to provide oversight and bring experience. Rob's touched on transport integration. We are nearing the end. And, you know, as we get towards the end, we'll start to see the full benefits of that coming through. But the key is that we are moving the profile of our fleet. And, you know, another positive step for us this year is we're going to work towards our environmental accreditation and with ISO. With our suppliers, we need to work jolly hard with those guys. You know, I've said to a few of you that the engagement with suppliers has been a little more difficult this year, presented a challenge because of the difficulties in the supply chain. What we will also do before we report to you in November is provide an initial assessment of our Scope 3 and deliver the findings and analysis. In terms of the industry, just to give you some stats, our suppliers number something in the region of 180 accounts. Of those 180, there's probably 30 that are really important to us. So on the one hand, you know, I always look at this as an equilateral triangle, and it's one of the reasons why the intermediary has a purpose in the industry, because you've got a few suppliers trying to deliver into 25,000 different accounts. You know, so all those guys are at the bottom, suppliers are at the apex, we're in the middle, and we make what's quite a difficult job much, much more easy for them. And it's a bit like, you know, Farron talking about key accounts. Those customers need to focus on the front of their house, and we do the stuff in the background, and it's essentially what we give to our suppliers. So there is a real challenge with what we have to do with the industry, because floor coverings are technically complicated. They're a composite product made up of many things. There's low engagement at the moment. And, you know, we are, even though we're a little bit behind where you'll have noticed other industries are, we're still a little bit behind the curve. And, you know, until the end consumer is ignited by this subject, it is very, very difficult. And, you know, the highly fragmented supply chain won't help with that. So I think the interesting thing is that, you know, if you look at some of the continental countries, the standout is the Netherlands. They are giving instruction to the floor covering industry to pull their socks up. We've got stuff coming down the road, you know, extended product responsibility, end of life regulation, technology. You know, technology does need to be brought to bear in order to help with this subject. Building certification is already here, and Domus are having to provide that for some of their customers. And as I said, we need to really get consumers ignited behind the subject in order to make the industry stand up and start to think about it in a much more serious way. And, you know, when looking at the Scope 3 value chain, the thing that, you know, emerges there is that a lot of the emissions issue around greenhouse gas starts with the actual manufacture of the product and then the end of life of the product. And we as an intermediary actually don't contribute that much. But, you know, I've said we are looking to improve our circumstances in as far as we can. I think, you know, for this to be successful, we need, and, you know, you've heard it a number of times this morning, we need data to help develop. We need to collect additional data. What we're going to do is carry out a baseline test on Scope 3, and that will be our starting point. And then you can measure how successful or otherwise we are through the targets that we choose to set. So that's all I wanted to say today. We'll update you more in November with a much more thorough examination of where we're up to. Just wanted to conclude from, you know, where we've been today. Spoken about transport integration, network consolidation that Adrian referred to at the outset, trade counters, you know, you've not only heard about them, but you've seen it. E-commerce digitalization, which for me personally, I think is a really exciting development, not only for us, but for the industry. Customer propositions, again, you know, the insight that that's given us, it won't have been that long ago that you will have said to us, well, who are your customers? And I would have said, well, it's the independent retailer and flooring contractor. And now you can say, well, isn't that so limited, Steve? You've got another five sectors to look at. And in due course, within those five, there are two buried, which, you know, if there's no reason why seven with success can become nine. So one of the things that sits behind all of this is that we are using data, we're using fact to drive our decisions, to help us focus on the targets, instead of the mythology that was such a popular ingredient of the industry in days gone by. So that really brings the day to a close. I hope you found it instructive. I hope you know you've realised that we've got a really, really good team. They've got a rich experience from a great deal of background. The positive thing is that in the very short period of time that they've all been with us, we've made such a huge amount of progress. You know, and I did say to you at the start, the reason that it's taken so long to get to where we are is the complexity that's associated with unpicking what we were starting with. And the complexity was created by the silo structure of the business. Now, it had a purpose once upon a time, but that purpose had elapsed. And it was a question of, first of all, recognising that the point had come to change the way the business worked and then get the capability to help us move forward. And I think, and I hope you agree, that we do have that now. So thank you very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.